You have to know that only Andy would have done that for me. But I asked him to do it because I wanted to explore my sermon topic, which is the paradox of patriotism. One of John Wesley's favorite sayings was, "Preach often, but use words only when necessary." Preach often, but use words only when necessary. If I was obeying John Wesley, I would sit down right now, because you have heard about the paradox of patriotism through the offertory. But us old preachers just haven't mastered how to do that. We like to hear ourselves speak, I think, a bit too much. The paradox of patriotism. Patriotism is defined, in the Merriam-Webster dictionary at least, as a love for or a devotion to one's country. Some might consider Andy's rendition of this unpatriotic. Minor chords, dissonant sounds, notes that came in a place where they had not been heard before. But for some of you, it may have been patriotic because it inspired you to think about patriotism in a new way. Although meaningful and inviting reflection, when we hear something that we have not heard before in a different way, it takes us to another place. It opens up our minds and hopefully our hearts. I have to say that the words of the first verse of the national anthem, even the first two verses of the national anthem, while almost impossible for most people to sing, and a bit melodramatic if you really read them, the third verse that is never printed in a hymnal that I have been able to find reminds us in an awful way about the plight of slaves in our country. When Francis Scott Key wrote this music during the War of 1812, the only opportunity slaves had to move to freedom in a way where they would be protected and supported and paid was to fight for their country in 1812. I hope that's not God doing that to me. Jenna's gonna sing that third verse. Say those words. I may not can say them still. In my opinion, what should we do about the mic? Sorry, God. It's still doing it. Sound person? That sounds better. In my opinion, our national anthem does in fact portray the paradoxical nature of our country's history, not only in regard to racism, but also today with regard to injustice and racism that exist in some evil forms down to this very day. The Merriam-Webster, again, dictionary says that a paradox is present when two opposite ideas are both held up as true, even when this seems impossible. Two opposite ideas held up as true, even when this seems impossible. We had a discussion before church about whether you could love your country and stand against it at times. I think the paradox of patriotism shows that you can do precisely that. The word paradox, interestingly enough, can also be defined as a statement or proposition that seems self-contradictory or absurd, but in reality, expresses a possible truth. A possible truth. Think about it. To kneel before anyone has usually throughout history been a sign of respect, a sign of paying honor, a sign of reverence, a sign of showing the one, whether God or royalty, that they would be loyal to that one. I believe, with all that I have heard from the various professional football players and now some basketball players and some professional baseball players, as well as some high school athletes, that their intention has been to kneel, not in disregard of our country, not in disregard of our flag, not to show disdain for our servicemen and women, but as a way to draw attention to a situation that exists in our country today where more and more and more and more young, particularly African American men, are being channeled into our prison system. And more and more and more of those prison systems are being operated as for-profit industries. Perhaps you did not know this, but they are paid $165 a day for each prisoner they hold. That comes from your tax money. If you didn't know that, $165 a day, often for crimes that were merely traffic violations, often that happened because young black men right now are so scared of law enforcement wherever they see them that they take off running or they try to escape with their car. That doesn't make it right, but I understand why they do it, because of all the deaths that have happened to those who remained in their car or were standing there and didn't run. That doesn't make everyone right. It doesn't make every police officer or law enforcement official wrong. They have a terribly difficult and challenging job. But the young black males, particularly in our country, are suffering more than I can even imagine. One of the definitions of the word paradoxical is if it conveys an idea or practice that is different from what other people consider to be the norm. Isn't that interesting? If it conveys something that's different from what other people consider to be the norm. Unless we understand the paradoxical nature of so many aspects of our lives today, particularly in this day and time in our nation's history, with so many competing sources of information coming at us so quickly from so many different directions, we will be tempted to label those who have different norms, beliefs, practices that are different from ours. We will label them wrong, or perhaps dangerous, or perhaps even evil, or perhaps an act of treason. A rather light illustration of this, but I think it speaks to it very well, are our Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah holidays and traditions. Most of our families provide an interesting, though sometimes hilarious, example of exactly this kind of paradox. Just because our particular family may have done certain things or eaten certain foods or had the same people bring the same dish for 25 years in a row because that was their dish to bring, it fascinates me how precisely we make a tradition of something we may have only done one time before. And then from then till eternity, we have to do it exactly that way again. Any new son or daughter-in-law or spouse or partner or somebody invited to a special holiday, luncheon or dinner, who does not follow these traditions will certainly raise some eyebrows or evoke private conversations after dinner, especially with anybody who's had more than one glass of wine. I never forget the time my family gathered at my sister's home for Thanksgiving rather than mine, where it was always done right. And it was done right because I had been told we would do it precisely the way it had been done before, and I obeyed for once in my life. The funny thing about doing it right at my house was the first time I cooked the turkey, it was the first time I'd cooked a turkey. I didn't know that there was stuff on the inside of the turkey. And so when my daddy, who always was the one to carve the turkey, that was part of doing it right, started carving, he hit a plastic bag that was inside. You'd think I'd learn my lesson. Second year, I knew that there was this stuff in the back of the turkey, and so I got it out, and my mom made giblet gravy with it, which we had not had the year before. And so my daddy was again cutting the turkey, but up toward the front, the neck. And once again, he cut into a plastic bag full of innards. So it became tradition at my house from that point on that I always hid something in the turkey for my daddy to find. And if I had not, it would have been a disastrous Thanksgiving. But the year we did Thanksgiving at my sister's home, and that is my younger sister, who didn't know as much as I did, her husband almost ruined the entire experience because his family was from New Jersey, and they were also with us. And he was the first one in our family to be from north of the Mason-Dixon line. So he'd been in trouble with my mom and dad for a while. But that year, rather than cooking rice to have the gravy placed upon, he cooked mashed potatoes. And I have to tell you, it was the first time, but not the last time, he was called a damn Yankee. Most of us can laugh at examples of this and hopefully understand that bringing a different food or bringing a different activity or a particular holiday way of doing things does not have to be labeled as absurd or disloyal or defiant or even unpatriotic. Now that my mom and dad have died and it's not quite so serious, we outdo each other to see who can do the silliest thing on Thanksgiving holidays. But when all of us are at our best, we know that neither the particular way we celebrate holidays nor even our particular political or religious beliefs or practices should cause so many moments of tension or hurt feelings or arguments or grudges that last way too long, because most of us realize that any family, any group of people, regardless of the makeup, that is going to survive is going to have conflict. And thus they have to learn about the paradox of holding different ideas, different beliefs, different traditions in that dialogical tension with each other that can allow all to exist without being demonized. If we were able to maintain that tension in a civil and respectful way for long enough, the miracle of all miracles might eventually occur, where we finally would become able to understand that what we previously considered to be the opposite of what we believed, completely different from what we believed, it actually is just a different piece of the puzzle, especially when it comes to our nation of America, the United States of America, at this point in our history. For a number of years, my idealistic self thought we were learning this lesson not only as a family, but as a nation. However, it seems that we may have recently regressed to either an adolescent type of rebellion or a childish temper tantrum in many areas of our life together as a nation. My experience as a pastor looking out and working with families is that this deterioration is transferring into the lives of individuals who do things that they may never have done before, who become more violent than they may have ever been before, who wear uniforms and signs and symbols they may never have worn before, thus increasing the fear, the tension among everybody. To convey through the non-violent symbolic gesture of kneeling should not divide so many people in our nation into those who immediately decided that the players were right because it was their First Amendment right and no one should criticize them on the one side, and those on the other who believed it was not only unpatriotic, but it was a slap in the face as to our flag, to our nation, as well as to our servicemen and women, many of whom have spoken up and said, that is precisely why I went to fight, to protect your freedom of speech, your freedom to protest, and that has come out over and over again. Many of those attending sporting events have done things that I don't think they would have done before. They have booed, they have shouted obscenities, they have thrown things at players, and even Friday night, as a 22-year-old young woman sang the national anthem at a professional basketball game, and then after it was over, kneeled briefly, just for a moment, to express her solidarity with those she knew who were suffering in our nation, she was booed off the stage. Some athletes have lost their jobs over this issue. Some of their families have received death threats. And one professional basketball player's house has been burned to the ground. Rather than exercising the kind of leadership that seeks to resolve a problem in a way where there don't have to be winners and losers, both our president and our vice president, in my opinion, and many other leaders in our local communities and across the nation have stoked the fires and flames and kept the controversy going much longer than it might have otherwise. I may be wrong about that, but that's my opinion. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy for the fans. It's a tragedy for the players who are being abused wherever they are seen. And it's a tragedy for us as a nation that we cannot work out something that should be so simple with a compromise that doesn't bring winners and losers, but lifts us all to a higher level. This is the kind of leadership that we need in the church and in our nation in this day. And I am so grateful that you, as Unitarian Universalists, are spending this entire year, as I understand it, attempting to understand the deeper issues of racism and white supremacy, where you're reading books that you may not have read before, when you're learning pieces of history that you may not have known or learned growing up, and if you went to the same kind of schools I went to, where you are listening to panel discussions with people who are expressing different opinions from what you may have ever heard before. Most importantly, perhaps, where you are struggling with your own inner truths and attitudes to see what within you may need to be changed to make this nation, this community, and certainly our world a more peaceful place. I congratulate you for being realistic to know that this work will not be accomplished quickly or easily or perfectly. It will be a long and agonizing struggle. There will probably be times when you will disagree with others in your congregation, or do with me now, but I pray you will do the soul work necessary to make the changes each of you need to make. Amen.